We're missionaries to the Junkwas people in the Kalahari Desert of Southern Africa, and I did not stumble. I did do a click there for you. It is the Junkwas language is a click language. There's four clicks. It's tonal, and they're of the Khoisan background. And I've given you a map just in case your geography is off a little bit. I don't blame you. So down in the bottom here, we have South Africa. You know what that is right there. Yes, that's Malawi. Most of you do. And so we're living out here in the Kalahari Desert among the Bushmen, in a place called the Nainai Conservancy in the northwest corner of Namibia. So this is Botswana. Victoria Falls, a lot of you might recognize, is right in here. That's Angola, Namibia, South Africa. So that's kind of where we are. And the Bushmen are classified as an unreached people group, and that is what I want to kind of unpack with you this morning, if you'll allow me to. So we're going to do a little experiment. Dave, if you go to the next slide. What does it mean to be unreached? I don't really think that a lot of us here in the States understand what that means. So we're going to do a little exercise. So if you'll allow me to, on the count of three, I want you to put your hands over your ears, okay? And then I'm going to say something, and then I'm going to give you the thumbs up. And then you can, when I do that, you can remove your hands, okay? Got that? So on the count of three, ready? One, two, three, put your hands on your ears. Okay, so the exercise there was that you didn't hear what I said. Some of you maybe read my lips, but we'll save that for later on. So you couldn't hear what I said because you couldn't hear me. Let me try this. Let me try in a different way, in a different language. Yohana tatu kumisita, kwa mana jinsu hi mungu alimoto mwane mwapeke. Ila kimutu amwamine asipote bali awe na uzima wa malele. Anybody here know Swahili? No? Okay, so then you don't know what I said. So you didn't hear what I said, and you don't know Swahili, so I'm not speaking the proper language to you. Well, let me try one more way. Let's see if most of you here can read. Can everybody here read? Okay, Dave, go ahead. Let's put this up here. Does anybody know gibberish? It's an official language, according to Google. Yeah, that's gibberish. So what am I trying to communicate to you? Are you frustrated yet? You're like, what are you trying to tell me this morning? Well, I was trying to tell you that God sent his only son to rescue you from your sin condition. I was telling you John 3:16. First of all, I spoke it to you, but you couldn't hear it because you've never had a chance to hear it. Second of all, I actually came to you and I told you in the language that I'm familiar with, but you're not familiar with that language, Swahili. And third of all, even though you could read, I still gave you a language that you weren't able to read because you can't read that. You see, that is just a taste of what it means to be unreached. If you go to the next slide, the unreached face many, many, many barriers. Sorry. And hearing the gospel in their language is just one of those barriers. Go ahead, Dave, to the next slide. So what does it mean to be unreached? This is the quote-unquote official classification. Less than 2% of the tribal population professes to be Christ followers. Go to the next slide, please. An unreached person, simply put, just they have a limited access to the gospel. In other words, John 3:16. In America, we're spoiled. We have many translations of the Bible. We have many translations in our native tongue. We have many oral versions of the Bible. We have a dramatized version, a non-dramatized version. We have the Passion of Christ. We have the Jesus film in 15 different varieties. And we have this film done this way. And we have all these resources done in English, in our native tongue for us here. We're surrounded by churches everywhere we go. You can come down. I mean, you can go in these mountains and go explore, which I've done, and you think you're lost, and you turn a corner. What's around the corner? a small country church. We're surrounded by churches everywhere. We're surrounded by believers everywhere. To put it simply, we have a lot of access to the gospel here in America. We can access it in many, many, many different ways. Most of us can read. Most of us can write. And if we can't, we have friends who will help us, who will sit with us. I know that's a ministry of some churches with some elderly folks who just can't read anymore, and they just want to hear the gospel, and maybe they can't even get the machines to work. Somebody will just go read the scriptures to them. That is what we have here in the States. But you see, an unreached person, go to the next slide, Dave. This is what's hard for us to understand. An unreached person may never, ever, ever, ever hear those words in John 3:16. Imagine that, going your whole entire life without hearing John 3:16. Go ahead to the next slide. But what if an unreached person actually heard those words? Well, there again, there's no real healthy churches nearby, and there's very few believers nearby. The scriptures aren't, go ahead to the next slide, I think. There's no Bibles that are translated into their language nearby, whether it's written or audio. So you see, there's a lot of challenges. And the unreached are waiting to hear the gospel, but it seems like, I don't know, we're lacking a proper balance to reach them. There's a video I was going to show you, and it basically breaks down the world into three parts. And the first part is what we call the World A, World B, and World C. And when you get around to it, World A is the people who have the gospel. They have that's 33% of the world. And then there's World B. These are people who have scriptures translated into their language, but maybe they're not accepting it right at this moment in time. And then there's World C over here, and that's about 30% of the total population of the world. So if you do the math, and actually I've heard stats recently, it's maybe upwards towards 40%. So if there's 70 billion people on the earth, let's just say roughly about 3 billion, okay? 3 billion of the people in the world are unreached. 3 billion have probably not had a chance to hear John 3:16 yet. And yet, we're only, out of all the missionaries that the whole entire global missionary force is sending out into the world, we're only sending 3% to the unreached. Only 3 out of 100 are going to reach these 3 billion people. There's 7 billion people on earth. So to me, it seems like we're a little bit out of balance for some reason. But the good news is that mission agencies are realizing this across the globe. And they're starting to shift more towards how do we bring the gospel to the unreached. That is Claudia and I's calling. That is why we joined Africa Inland Mission, because Africa Inland Mission is focused on unreached people groups, bringing the gospel to the unreached. The truth is all the easy places have been taken. The south coast of France, the Caribbean, all these nice places, they've been taken. What's left are the hard, remote places in the world. And that's why they're still unreached. And so that video kind of breaks down and just says, you know what, we're not putting a lot of manpower resource into 40% of the world. So now I hope you have a little bit of an understanding of what it means to be unreached. Well, maybe. Can I add one more layer to this whole puzzle? At least for the June class people. Let me add this layer. Go ahead, Dave, to the next slide. This is the Junquas who we live amongst. Let's go back to the beginning before I had you cover your ears. And let's pretend that maybe you haven't had anything to eat. Go ahead, Dave. In the past 24 hours. You go to the next slide. Maybe you haven't had anything to eat in the last 24 hours. What you ate was just corn, mushed up with some water, kind of like our grits here, but even less tasty. And if luckily you might have had a cup of tea like Saba here is making, with about half a cup of sugar in that cup for energy. Go to the next slide. Or it rained last night and you're lucky that the sun is out this morning because you've been able to hang things out to dry. But the holes in your living quarters, I'll just put them that way, seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger every season. And so every time it rains. You see, the Junghwas of the Kalahari are an amazing people. Go ahead to the next slide. They're hunter-gatherers who have been given a piece of land in the northwest part of Namibia that I showed you. It's called the Nainai Conservancy. They've been given this land to continue their old ways. But in reality, the situation is just like what we have here in the States on our Indian reservations. The land is actually too small for them to continue full-on their hunter-gatherer ways. And so, drunkenness and a poverty mindset has set in. Self-esteem has gone down. Unemployment and dependence on foreign aid for that maize meal is our major, major problems. Life expectancy is short due to lack of proper sanitation and nutrition. So from a humanitarian point of view, let's just throw out the fact that they're unreached and all those barriers. From a humanitarian point of view, there are a lot of barriers to go reach these people. So I want to summarize to you what it means to be a Bushman. Go ahead, Dave. First point. Number one, they have limited or no access to the gospel. Go ahead. Yep. Number two, there are very few churches or believers are nearby. Number three, they probably have no Bible to read and most can't read anyway. Number four, there's many hardships of life compound the already spiritual barriers that exist. And number five, again, simply put, they can go their whole entire life without hearing John 3:16. So the barriers are huge, but God has been sending people to the unreached for a long time. Think back to your Bible lessons of a little guy named Jonah. Yeah, he was going to God sent him to an unreached people group. So this isn't something new. God is in the business of reaching the unreached. And so that is why we were encouraged this morning. So now let me turn to the focus of the things that God is actually doing specifically amongst the Junghwas and how we fit into that plan. Go ahead, Dave, if you want. Back in 2006, we were able to live amongst the Junghwas for a year and started to learn a little bit of language and build a little relationship before we had to leave. And I think last time we kind of shared some of that here when we were with you last. Claudia has Anastasia, so I'm going to skip her part and come back to it in just a moment. But she's going to share a story. I'm going to go ahead and share a story of a guy that I met. His name is Dom. Dave, if you'll go about three or four slides forward. That's it right there. That's good. So this was my neighbor, Dom. We share the same name. He gave me his name. So in Bushman land, that is my name. They don't know my name is Jeremy. Dom and I would go and gather firewood together. Go to the next slide. He'd climb into the thorny trees. I wouldn't dare do it because I get all cut up. But we go out in the bush and it'd take a couple hours and we try to gather some firewood so that he could have a little bit of wood to cook that maize mush kind of grits thing that they have for supper. We'd go out there into the woods and into the bush and try to find some dead trees and gather firewood, and he would show me things on the ground. He would show me animals that had come by. He'd tell me their weight, and for you hunters, their weight, their height, they're pregnant, they're not pregnant, male, female, all kinds of crazy things. These are people who are masters of tracking. So it's fascinating to go out there with him and just forage and see what's going on. And Dom, we would just hang out. He was building a fence, and I went over to his next door and just said, I want to help. How can I help you? You know, and he'd show me how to do this and show me how to do this. And, and we just hung out a lot together. And he started to show an interest towards the things of God towards the end of our time there. He could speak very little English. A lot of communication was happening via hand signs because I could speak very little Junhuas. So a lot of it was just kind of hand signs sometimes. But Afrikaans is the tribal language of Namibia, and he knew Afrikaans. And I found out that actually he could read Afrikaans, which was amazing. So I bought him a Bible in Afrikaans, which is available there, and I told him to start in Genesis. I said, you read that chapter right there, and then we're going to talk about it. Unfortunately, we had to leave before we could actually start the process of that. But before we left, Dom gave me a special gift, and he would take me into the bush, and he would show me materials that we needed to gather together, and he would show me what to do, and he'd let me try to gather these things and try to craft this thing. And this special gift is very dear to me because I don't know if too many other white guys have something like this. And so it's a traditional hunting bow, and I actually have it here this morning. He presented this to me right before we left. And so if you're interested in how you actually use these, you can come see me afterwards. I'll have it with me and can show you. We've got the arrows that we've made, and this is everything out of the bush. Some people ask how I got it through customs. You just keep walking until customs stopped you, and they didn't stop me on the way in, so it's here. So, but this is everything from the bush right here, and this is how they hunt, and. This is the legit thing. This is how they kill animals. This isn't something you buy in a souvenir shop. So, Dom made this for me. We worked on it together, and we're supposed to go hunting sometime soon, especially when we go back. But that is Dom. Claudia, let me see if I can take the little one. So I want to let Claudia. Dave, if you want to go back a couple slides, let's see, back two more. I'm going to let her, you want to use this mic right there? Anastasia might just sit right there. Go forward one more slide. There you go. I'm going to let her tell a story of somebody.
Good morning. let me breathe just a second. this is Anastasia, if you haven't heard her yet. And this lady that's standing next to me in this picture, her name is Guantua. That's a side click, like you would call a horse. So it's guanc. And she became like my grandmother. She took me out in the bush, and we did what the ladies did. We collected firewood also. That was a constant thing. But we collected berries, nuts, beetles, caterpillars, tubers, you name it. They knew everything that you could eat in the Kalahari, which is about 120, 150 different types of plants. But this particular day, when this photo was taken, we had gone out to a village, and we were the only two women that went. And so part of going to a village is you have to go visit every little hut. So I followed her around like her little granddaughter and sat with each little hut, and we had a conversation with whoever lived at that hut. But I had forgotten my water bottle that day. It was back in the vehicle, and we live in the Kalahari, so it's hot.
Come here.
Got a cup of water from one of the huts that we were at, and she offered it to me. And I think we had a conversation earlier about tuberculosis. It's prevalent there, and it can be passed between cups. And so I said a little prayer real quick and said, God, please protect me. I want to be a part of these people's lives. And so I drank from that cup. I did not get tuberculosis, but sharing that cup of water that day opened up doors, because on the way home, This picture was taken right at sunset, and once the sun sets there, the temperature drops. And so she took off that outer plaid covering. I only had those short sleeves shirt on, and she wrapped it around me just to keep me warm. And that was just God wrapping his arms around me and saying, I love you, and I want you here to love on these people. If you'll go to the next slide. This is me in Guantanamo making jewelry. They make jewelry out of ostrich eggs. And she actually gave me this necklace that I'm wearing today. But this was just one of the tasks I did with the ladies. And I got to learn how to make all the different stages. But after that day, sharing a cup of water, God continued to open door after door after door. You know, I'd be sitting with the ladies, and it was well past lunchtime, and I was hungry. And they have so little, and I had so much in my house, but I didn't feel like I could get up and just go eat and come back. And they would break off a corner of their lunch for me. And it was just those little things of sharing life with them. And I look so forward to going back and sharing and learning more language so I can share with her who the living water is so that she doesn't have to thirst anymore.
Yeah. All right, tag, mommy's it. So where do we go from here? What is our response? We return early next year. January, February time frame to start work. For me personally, they're without a gospel. They're without the Bible in general. And so they cannot read and write. And we're finding out amongst, there's a modern movement called the orality movement amongst unreached people groups who cannot read and write. And so oral Bible story is, I've gotten some training on that. I actually just attended a conference last week on emerging technologies and emerging practices in orality. And so what that is basically we're able to bring the Bible to them in short stories format, 2 to 3 minutes stories. And what they do at night, they sit around the campfire and they share stories during the day. So you can just imagine with me for a moment what's going to happen when they have 2 to 3 minute stories and they start telling these stories from the Bible and these stories start connecting pieces of the bigger puzzle and the puzzle, the great story of the Bible together. And all of a sudden the Bible starts coming to their ears. Now this isn't a little, this is not a literal translation word for word. That comes later on in the process. But to start off with, we go with these short stories. The short stories are going to take a while to get worked out because I don't want to bring my Western view into them. I want them to embrace them with their culture. Some of these stories will be in the form of songs, dances, art, whatever. We need to embrace the whole entire spectrum of how they communicate to each other. And so that is what I'm going to be working on quite a bit, along with just hanging out with Dom and the others in the community. I might even be doing some Bible study on the side. We'll see. So Claudia is, like she said, she hangs out with the ladies and makes jewelry, but she knows how to make soap and is looking forward to tackling some of the humanitarian side of things with some soap making so that we can at least tell them, you know, just wash your hands before you eat. That makes a huge difference. It keeps you a lot healthier than what you are now. She also is going to use some of her Farming God's Way agricultural training in different ways. One of them is through the plant of moringue, which is a plant that provides a lot of nutrition to them. So those are some things that that we are going to be doing. There's a lot more, but first of all, we still got to do language. We got to learn language because, like I demonstrated to you earlier, if I can't speak their language, how are they going to know? So I have to learn the click language. Claudia has to learn the click language. And so that's the first thing we've got to do. And we've just got to continue to build relationships with people. That's that. Dave, if you want to go like 4 or 5 slides. So it just basically all boils down to this, if I can summarize it keep going. That's Claudia making soap, showing her language helper how to do soap. Keep going, Dave. And that's her doing some meringue plants there with one of the local kids love to help her water. Go ahead. It boils down to this. When everything we do, what is our overarching goal? Is to share the gospel and to plant Christ-centered churches who are Christ-centered reproducing churches. Our goal is about a five-year plan right now. We hope to work ourselves out of a job in 5 years. We hope that I can turn around and I can go, that is Dom. And I had a chance to present the gospel to him, and he accepted it. And now he has internalized the scriptures for himself. And now he is sharing that to Homa over there. And now Homa is actually internalized the scriptures. And Dom is actually discipling Homa. And look, and Homa went over to over there. And he has now accepted the gospel. And he is discipling others. And so you see what I'm saying? Jeremy's over here. Dom, this big Dom, white Dom, as they call me sometimes. I'm over here, and I'm just watching these guys go. Because now they have internalized the scripture, they have the word of God, and they can take it and they can go and they can share it with the others in their language that they know. And so that is our goal, is to bring the gospel, to love on these people, but then to get out of the way and let God do his thing. And so, yes, we're going to we're classified as pioneer early church planters, I think is our classification of something like that. But that's what we do. So I want to end it there with me talking, because I want to give you a few minutes to ask any questions that you have. Before we do that, though, Dave, if you can go to the, I think there's an, yeah, so we're looking forward to going back. This is Saba. That is Claudia's Junhua's name, by the way. This is Dom's wife. So Dom and his wife Saba kind of adopted us into their family. And so Claudia is referred to as Saba. Anastasia has a Junhua's name. Her name is Tasa, which is Saba's sister. Saba's sister died right before we left. Actually, they actually waited for us to return back from holiday or vacation, and they asked me to preside over the funeral service. And that was a huge... I don't know of another white guy that's been asked to do that. And for us, that was kind of the catalyst to go, wow, these people love us. They want us here, and we tried our hardest to be there, but visa paperwork issues with the government, just sometimes you just can't. It's Africa. but God is redeeming that whole situation, and we're going to be able to go back now, and we're excited about it. And so when we went back to go get our things, Claudia knew she was pregnant, and so she asked Saba, which this is cultural, who technically it would be the grandmother, kind of, in a way. She's the grandmother's named the children. And she said, I am pregnant. Can you give me a name? Can you give me a name? And she says, I want to name your child Tasa after my sister. And so Anastasia, Junhua's name is Tasa. So go to the next slide. We have brand new prayer cards. If you guys want to pick one up on the way out, they're on the back table. Just want to offer those up to you. You can put them on your fridge late at night when you're getting a little snack. It's perfectly fine to stop and say a prayer because there's a 7-hour difference. So actually what you're doing is we have just started our day. So when you go get your midnight snack, we've just started our day. So it's a perfect time just to say a little prayer. God bless these people today. Pray for them as they go out in the community. That would help. And the next slide is, we have a newsletter. There's a sign-up sheet back there if you want to sign up for our newsletter. So I want to let you know that those are back there on the back table. All right, in the few minutes I have left, do you have any questions that you want to ask? Yes, ma'am.
You said Junhua?
Junhua, yes. Yeah, you can say Junhua. Junhua.
And Son?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
the San are class. It's a name that white people have given the Bushmen. That's also a name that people have given these people group that live in the southern part of Africa. Junhua is the language dialect attributed to those people in the Nainai Conservancy area. And so they're referred to as the Junhuas people.
So the slash and then the
mm-hmm.
is the click?
The slash is the click. It's the front of the teeth.
And you said there are four clicks?
There's four. There's a hard click, which is ooh, like that. There's the side click, which Claudia told you, which is, and then there's a, I got to get really kind of moisture in my mouth here. There's another one that's, it's like a, it's off the top of your, with your tongue. It's hard. That's one I'm still struggling to try to master.
And is that just that one language, or is it four clicks for a bigger language group, or is it, they're not the only clicks?
No, they're not the only clicking. No. So if you look at language of Africa, you have Bantu tribes, which came down to the southern part of Africa from Central Africa. In the southern part, you have the Khoisan language family.
What?
Khoisan. And so those two worlds kind of collided. And there's actually a language near Cape Town, South Africa, called Khoisan. Or not Khoisan, sorry, it's, wait a minute. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, it's got a click in it, and then it's got a Bantu lang. So Swahili is Bantu. We've learned some Swahili, and the grammar structure of Swahili is it's very formal. This is laid out this way. Matter of fact, I was reading that sign back there. If that's from Malawi, the green one on the wall, is that Malawi?
I'm trying to figure out which one.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what that is.
That's a Bantu language. I recognize the structure.
Right,
but it's based off of Bantu.
Yeah, because they did come down. I got to go to the cultural center.
Yeah.
Right,
right. So that is a Bantu. I could tell by the structure that's a Bantu language. But Khoisan is a totally different structure. And that is what the Junhuas speak. It's based on clicks and sounds. But there is a language near Cape Town. It smashed it into one. They took Bantu and they kind of put clicks on top of it.
Like
Creole. I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Yes, sir. So there's about 4,000 people that live in that conservancy area, kind of on that reservation. They live out in villages. What they've done is the government's dug boreholes into the ground. There's great aquifers underneath. And they've given solar pumps. And they got plenty of water. Water's not an issue. So you had a question?
Who's going to teach you the language?
Who's going to teach us the language? So that's up to us. What we do is we get language helpers. So we find somebody in the community who can maybe speak a little bit of English. And then we try to we sit down with them and we ask questions upon questions. And then we go out and spend a lot of our days just out amongst the people listening. Anastasia right now is learning English. How is she learning English? She's just listening. We listen almost for a year to two before we actually start speaking a language. And so the same principle. We just sit and we listen and we listen and we listen. Especially when it has clicks in it. That's when it becomes very difficult, because then you got to take that word and then you got to have the click, and which click is it, and you got to get your ear to pick up the click. And actually in Junhuas, we've been told that the kids only learn one click at a time. So they actually don't really fully start speaking the language till they're about maybe 4 or 5 years old with clicks in them. They will just hear a click and they will just do that one click for everything for a while. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's very Christian. Mm-hmm. But then you start getting out into the outlying villages, and then you have to do it, and then they have a lot of witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
At the same time.
Yes. So the Junhuas people are emanistic, meaning that they believe in the spirits, ancestral worships, everything has a spirit about them. And yes, there's witch doctors everywhere, and yeah, so we have to, yeah. Yep. And they're famous for this trance dance that they do around the fire, with the shaker beads on their ankles, trying to get wisdom and guidance from their ancestors. They'll do it before a hunt. They'll do it before a lot of things. Yeah. So that's the hard part. As I'm thinking about bringing the gospel through story, and when I want to embrace the arts and embrace the dancing, it's like, okay, how do we redeem these practices that Satan has taken over and redeem them unto Christ? It's going to happen. He's going to do it. It's going to be awesome. Okay. If you have any more questions. Yes.
What kind of
So for the most part, we go about 3.5 hours away. That's the nearest town to us, so we're out in the middle of nowhere. And we can get a lot of staple foods like canned tomatoes and pasta and things like that. So rice, beef jerky. We buy a lot of beef jerky. They call it biltong over there. So that's what Claudia and I do for our family. They eat a lot of that grits thing, the maize meal stuff. We don't particularly.
Call it SEMA.
SEMA, PAP, Ugali. It just depends on what part of Africa you're from. They hunt everything but probably lions and elephants. They hunt a lot of the antelope animals, kind of like the deer here in the U.S. They're just bigger and have horns and can kill you. deer, you know, for the most part can't. So they hunt a lot of things out in the bush. They are very aware of the populations of animals and not to overhunt, though. So they don't always have meat readily available. Yes, sir.
They use claws?
Yes, they do. On the arrows, yeah. It's a beetle that comes from a certain tree. They only get it right before they hunt because if we were to touch it as humans, it would knock us down and kill us pretty much. So that arrow is just meant to penetrate the skin. It's not to take the animal down. Put the poison in, and then they go finish it off. That's the way they've hunted for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So, yep. All right. If you have any more questions, yes, one more.
On one picture where they're making the soap.
Uh-huh.
Is that your house?
That was our house, yes.
And so you have your cell phones and you have electricity to charge?
We had a solar system. Solar powered system that
we
were able to charge our cell phone, and I could run I could charge up the laptop.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's how you communicate with the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it worked.
Okay.
When if you can remember back to the days of dial up internet, that's about what it is, but it doesn't always work.
Uh-huh.
So it's even more frustrating than dial up.
Okay.
So if you have any more questions, feel free to we'll be around after the service. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Kurt. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.